Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everybody, this is producer Jed here. They don't usually let me speak, but I've kind of crept away and they don't realise that I'm doing this. I just wanted to say thank you very much for listening for the past two seasons and for buying tickets to our live show. And thankfully, you guys love us and we have sold out all of the tickets for our live show on the 24th of November. Really, really proud of the guys and really proud of myself for producing such a great show. If you can't get to the show, don't worry, because we are recording it, of course, and we will be putting it out towards Christmas. And there will be a few surprises on the night, so get excited about...
Jed, yes, Tom? What are you doing?
Nothing, Tom, nothing.
You're just testing the mic, right?
Just testing the mics.
Okay.
Yeah, the mics sound fine now. Yeah, mics sound fine.
Okay, well, and also, why have you not got your trousers on? Jed, can you put your trousers on? We need to get this episode started.
All right.
This episode of Monkey Tennis is brought to you by the Massive Beef Eater Bear Company. Celebrate the best of London in the comfort of your own home with our life-size beef eater cuddly bears. There's enough space for a man to hide inside, and all of our stuffed toys have been tested to withstand an aggressive stabbing. Don't be mugged or not appreciated. Bring a massive bear dressed as a beef eater home for your kids today. Disclaimer, may not be easily transportable by bus.
Monkey tennis?
Damn!
Monkey tennis?
Little piece my foot of his thigh.
Monkey tennis?
Go to London, I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated.
Monkey tennis?
Done!
Monkey tennis?
On the whole, a very good effort, 7 on 10.
It's hotter than the sun!
Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
Hello and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge podcast less official than Bono's house. I'm Adam Brooks and let me introduce ye co-hosts, Tom Dark.
Golly, an alien judge.
Nick Older.
Sam and Heather.
And Tom Stab.
Bono!
So today we're dealing with episode 5 of series 2 of I'm Alan Partridge. I Know What Alan Did Last Summer. Starting in Radio Norwich, he's introducing...
always the same.
Always does.
Always the same. He's introducing sweaty lunatic Iggy Pop.
Which, I wouldn't say he's a lunatic, but he is quite sweaty.
Yeah. He really is.
I think he might be a lunatic.
Very damp.
Part of his punk special, which includes Iggy Pop and Madness.
The punk pack. Yeah, I mean, I did think Iggy Pop, yes, Madness, maybe not.
Also,
so much.
Did you notice that he said it builds to a climax with Madness, the punkest of the punk.
Baggy trousers. And it's probably worth mentioning at this point, we have put together a Spotify playlist of all the music played or referenced in Series 2, and you can find the link to that on our Facebook and Twitter and various things.
Yep, on Twitter we're at ThePartridgePod, or it's facebook.com/ThePartridgePod. Alan's got another polo neck on. I think I make this his fifth or sixth of the series.
You're really loving his polo necks, aren't you?
I think he might have bought them in bulk, you know.
Wouldn't surprise me.
They're all the
same. Probably from Foster's Menswear.
Just a good deal.
Yeah. Lucrative sponsorship deal.
He introduces his Super Talk feature, sponsored by Ginster's Pasties.
Super Talk! Brought to you by Ginster's Pasties.
A better sponsor than Dettol?
I would say so.
Probably more on brand.
Yeah. Less relevant, though. Dettol's got more to do with the deep bath than Ginster's has.
You want your
Dettol
for your deep bath, you want your Ginster's for your Super Talk. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's fuel for Super Talk? I don't know. I mean,
maybe.
I don't know if you've tried to Super Talk with a mouthful of Ginster's. It's not going to end well.
Oh, we should have bought some Ginster's, shouldn't
we? In fact, there's an amazing sequence of jingles in this opening section of the show, because you've got Super Talk, followed by Email of the Evening.
Email of the Evening!
And it's some kind of Dalek or robot voice. And then you have the incredible traffic jingle, which we're going to play in full now because it's worth listening to the entire thing.
Get out of the way, you f***ing idiot. You can get a bus through there, you f***ing c***s. You stupid f***ing p***. Let me through. Go. There's nothing there. Go.
Absolutely filthy.
So good.
Oh, love it.
Lots of swearing in there.
So they're super talking about evil dogs. I just wanted to stand up for the dog community and say there is no such thing as an evil dog. Only evil owners.
Good point.
All dogs are lovely.
Even, especially the naughty ones.
Especially the naughty ones.
Always reward with kisses.
I also love the Email of the Evening. The voice he's done that in, the Dalek style voice. He clearly still thinks of email as being the future. It's like in a previous episode where he talks about Danko fire sticks being used in futuristic TV series The X-Files, even though The X-Files is set in present day.
Yeah.
The prize he's given away as well is clearly some of Sonia's leftover London tats, isn't it?
If you look around the studio, there is London tats everywhere as well, so it's gradually increasing.
He's run out of space in the static caravan. I think he's basically just using his studio as a storage area.
But that did make me wonder. You see these bits of London tat kind of in the background at the static home, in the studio. Where does Sonia keep getting these from? Does this mean she's going to London constantly? Or is she going to London once and bulk buying all these things?
I think it's mail order.
Yeah, it's got to be, isn't it?
Later on, she treats it as a real treat to go to London. It's almost as if she's only ever been there once or twice.
We all know it isn't a treat to go to London.
I think we find out Alan has a cousin as well who once bought a tweenie knockoff. Can anyone remember what it was full of?
Soiled bandages.
That's the one.
You'd think there'd be some kind of early warning signs around, like, surely it'd be like a bad smell. It wouldn't smell good, would it?
Maybe it depends how badly soiled the bandages are.
True. Yeah. We'll never know.
That's left to the viewer's imagination, which I think is a smart idea. Yeah. Post credits, his one-liner is a fat arms, big beard, and that's just for men. Women.
So the prize is giving away the Action Man military figure. That's not Sonia's tat. Is that just general tat that he's giving
Sonia
away?
It is Sonia tat.
It is.
Yeah, it's a beef eater.
Yeah, it's a beef eater bear.
But why does he say Action Man?
Because he's trying to sell
That's the joke.
Yeah, he's trying to sell it to the audience.
Yes, again.
They can't see what we can see. The prize is a stinker.
Nick, can I just check? Have you actually watched the episodes before we've recorded this?
Yeah, of course.
What, in 2002?
You're funny.
He comes back.
I've done him.
He comes back into the studio playing the end of Bill Withers, who, thank the Lord, is still with us. I presume we've all checked to see if Bill Withers is still with us in 2016.
I haven't done that.
I'll have a quick look.
Oh, no, well, I already know. So, okay, good. Do you want to guess? Something might have happened overnight.
Shall
I tell you?
Yet to be discovered by the maid.
Shall I tell you when he was born? He's born in 1938. Do you want to all take a guess? Tom Dark, do you think Bill Withers is still with us?
Ooh, I'm going to say no.
Okay, Nick? Bill Withers, is he still with us?
Yeah, I think he's still with us.
Okay. At the time of recording, I should say that, Bill Withers is still with us.
Yay! All the best for Bill.
Yeah. You take this one, Tom Dark.
Okay. So, I was thinking, what is the best Bill Withers song? Anybody want to... Any suggestions there?
There's only one answer, isn't there?
Well, exactly. The answer is it's Lovely Day. So, there's a bit of a running gag that we have between ourselves about Lovely Day, the song. Which is essentially seeing who can hold the Lovely Day note for the longest. So I thought, What more would our listeners like than to hear us doing that live?
I'd like to state for the record that gag is a strong word to apply to this.
I'd also like to apologise in advance.
I'm still limbering up because I want to win this.
Stab is taking this seriously.
Oh, taking my shirt off.
Important question.
Don't forget, you can skip forward a podcast by 15 second increments. So just tap that twice. And
I think the people that listen to this have worked that one.
Important question. Are we starting on the word lovely or the word day?
I think you need lovely to get you in today.
Okay. Producer Jed's got his stopwatch up.
Right.
Okay.
Give us a signal.
We'll start with lovely.
Three.
Lovely day.
Melodious, very harmonic. It's Adam versus Nick. Adam's out. Nick's the winner.
Yes, get it in. Those clean lungs.
That felt like a lot longer.
26 seconds.
Round it up, it's 27.
There you go. Two taps on the skip button. Nobody knows that happened.
Yep.
That is podcast gold.
Okay. Absolutely. Alan gives the time as 1 a.m. I thought his show ended at midnight. Seems like he's all over the shop.
I think it's inconsistent.
Yeah. Much like this podcast. Yeah.
And Clifton's been banned from driving, which Alan is having a great time with.
Yeah, that's no surprise, is it?
Especially... Sorry, I think you mean Count Davula of Cliftonvania.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Jemble of the episode.
Jemble.
Every bloody week.
And Dave accuses him of having shocking prizes, which is fair. Fair criticism. Given that in a previous series, Dave was giving away £11,000, and Alan's, by comparison, in a better slot now.
The Clifton suspension quiz.
That's right. Yeah. Awful.
The things that Alan says about Clifton in this bit are brilliant. As the whole of Norfolk sleeps, something truly evil stirs.
Oh, Dave keeps trying to cut in, doesn't he? He's like, his coffin opens with
I've been up all night drinking human blood, and Alan goes, is that all?
Doesn't he burk up the sound effects as well?
That happens slightly earlier when he plays the jingle to Danny Franchetti's jazz box.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I got some good facts from the commentary about the Radio Norwich scenes. The commentary now is Peter Bainham and Steve Coogan. Steve Coogan's not on the commentary for the first few episodes, but he joined it later in the
series. Too busy, clearly.
Too busy. So Alan's image, bomber jacket, etc. here is very much post-midlife crisis. So Coogan had his teeth done between Series 1 and Series 2. The Norwich radio logo was updated for this series as well.
Yep.
And in real life, I believe, the London studio where this Radio Norwich scene was filmed is owned by Noel Edmonds.
Really?
Yep, wow. True fact.
Edmonds crops up quite a lot in Partridge.
He's a comparison, isn't he, really?
Yeah,
but he's a bit of a real life Partridge.
Yeah. Madeley, Edmonds, they're the source material in some ways. Norwich as a city was actually a very arbitrary choice, and Steve Coogan expressed mild annoyance where people would come up to him and be like, oh yeah, Norwich, oh I come from Norwich, oh I know all the places, you know. And Steve's a bit like, well,
there's no kind of reason as to why it's Norwich.
They just picked it, you know, they wanted a place somewhere that no one had laughed at before.
Yeah, I guess you can't think of another, whether it's a sitcom or a film or kind of anything that's based in the Norwich area, can you?
Yes. Yeah. Have Norwich done well out of it, or do you think, generally speaking?
Well, didn't
we
said in the first series that Norwich Council blamed the series on them not getting City of Culture in 1 year, whatever it was. But
they should have just tried harder.
Yeah.
There's more people that think worse of Norwich than there are people that are like, I'm going to go to Norwich because of Alan Partridge.
Who's been to Norwich?
Yes.
Producer Jed and Tom Stab.
Yep.
I've been.
I would go there to do a Partridge pilgrimage.
Have you been? Answer the question.
I've already said no.
Speak up.
What would you give? What would you give Norwich out of 10 as a town?
Oh, I really liked it. Yeah, I think it's an 8.
It's nice.
Yeah, I really like it.
Producer Jed. Producer Jed saying 4.
Oh, harsh critic. Nick, what are you saying?
7.
Okay, so we're probably averaging out.
Not enough IMAXs and comic book shops in producer Jed's liking.
But Nick, when you were there, was that the Partridge Stag Do that you did?
Yes.
So that is the best way to enjoy Norwich, I would
imagine.
Very true. Yeah, but the weather wasn't very good.
If anything, Norwich Tourist Board should probably embrace Partridge to the fullest and do guided tours around
there. Yeah,
and maybe they do, I don't know.
Also, we did publish on our Facebook page a little video of Nick's stag do. Yes. Not his stag do, but the stag do that he went on in Norwich. It's brilliant. Check it out.
Nick's not had a stag do. Okay.
No. Any more from the Radio Norwich studio?
The last thing, Dave Clifton signs off with Let's Go West. So that's Go West again.
Yeah, the second time Go West feature song in Partridge Music.
Also, I did make a note that Dave looks genuinely hungover.
Yeah, he looks awful. He looks
genuinely tired.
Or maybe he's just the undead.
Yeah. And actually, I've just checked online. There is actually a City of Norwich Alan Partridge walking tour that you can go on. Oh. So we can post a link to that. And there's obviously a brilliant picture of Alan just at the top outside Norwich City Hall. So yeah, if you are in Norwich and fancy a walk around, you can do the Alan Partridge walking tour.
Or maybe we could organise some kind of a Monkey Tennis Day out with all the fans.
God, that's good.
We'd definitely go.
We'll definitely do that.
Could we expense that? Do a Kickstarter.
To who?
Yeah, I was going to say, who are we charging? Yeah.
Jed will pay for
the City of Norwich.
So we're back in the static caravan where Alan's just enjoyed the best full English since Gary Wilmot's wedding. A good minor celeb shout. And also, I found a story on Reddit. I'm just going to read this out. Unfortunately, I don't have the person who wrote its name, but we'll try and find
that. Is this a Gary Wilmot story you've got?
Yes.
Excellent.
So, this is me quoting now. So, I've spoken to a few people about this joke over the years, and I've suddenly realised that I've never explained it here. Gary Wilmot, who some of us will remember, was an entertainer in the 80s who just happened to be married to my aunt. Yep. The backstory is that my father took his own life when I was very young, and I don't really see his side of the family at all. But I remember a story I was told when I was younger about how my dad's sister was married to Gary Wilmot. They divorced a few years later. As you may have guessed, my father's side of the family were all pretty large and a little greasy, to say the least. I could totally see them having a fry up at the wedding, or if not, it was clearly a dig at how unsavoury they were. I would love to know if Steve Coogan was at that wedding or if it was someone else. I always got a kick out of being one of the few people who knew the story behind the joke, and now it seems time to share it with the world.
Wow, and we've shared it with the listeners.
That's not really the story behind the joke. What they've said there is they've called some members of their family a bit greasy and said they might have had a fry-up. That's not factually a story at all, is it?
Well, I guess it's more the thing that you would serve a fry-up at a wedding.
Can I ask a question to the group? Off the back of this, Alan going through what he considers to be a 7/10 breakfast. I actually think that's a little bit harsh because he does give 10/10 to the bacon and the butter and mushrooms, but then he downgrades it. I wanted to get around the table. What is your perfect English full breakfast? What it's comprised of?
British Isles breakfast.
Sorry, I'll start with mine. So mine would be ideal: 2 sausages, 2 bacon, 2 hash brown, beans, toast, and a cup of tea. If mushrooms are listed, I won't say no, but repeat, must be cooked in garlic butter.
Oh, God, yeah.
And the condiment of choice, and I know this is going to cause controversy, is brown sauce every single time.
Always red sauce. Right, always red sauce. Thank you very much.
I've planted my flag in the ground. Let's go around the table and talk about our perfect English breakfast.
Okay, mine is somewhat renegade because there's a lot of things in an English breakfast, or British Isles breakfast, that I don't like. I'm not a fan of egg. Don't really like mushroom. I could lose bacon as well. So an ideal one for me is beans, 2 sausages, a couple of hash browns, brown sauce, possibly a bit of well-buttered toast, and because I'm normally hungover, that's what justifies a fry-up, a can of full-fat cola.
Absolute lunatic.
So you're not going for a hot drink option there?
No, the breakfast is the hot thing.
So interesting. Interestingly, two of us so far, neither of us have had egg on there. There you go.
Yeah, okay.
Tom Dark.
I would favour scrambled egg. I'd go for that, and I'd want that on a piece of nicely buttered toast. Brown bread's fine. I would want, I think, 2 sausages, 2 bits of bacon, must be crispy, very important.
Very important, I agree.
Beans is good. Also, one of my favourite elements would be some grilled tomato as well. And I'd have that wash that down with a coffee. Lovely coffee.
Yeah, I find the tomato often waters down everything a little bit, because it is quite,
you've got a bit of a juice box.
Well, yeah. No, you've got to slice that tomato in the middle, grill it open, so then when you've got it on the plate, a lot of the wateriness is dispensed.
Good tips here.
Nick, what's your breakfast chat?
I would have eggs, but I'd have them poached.
I knew you were going to say that.
That's just how I prefer them.
Yeah, no, I know. That's, I know that.
2 sausage, bacon, back, beans, hash brown.
Oh, God, I forgot hash browns. Always hash browns.
Mushrooms, white bread, ketchup.
Yeah. Oh, ketchup, yes.
Coffee. And Maybe some more toast if I want.
Unlimited toast.
You want that to be your choice.
I'd like unlimited toast.
So that's two for brown sauce, two for red sauce. Mm. Sorry, it's not. We're not.
Could we maybe go to producer Jed as the decider between red or brown?
That would use his entire word count for the series.
He could like one blink for red, two blinks for brown.
Jed, is it red or brown?
Burger sauce every time.
This is why we don't let him speak.
Burger sauce.
My God. You're a sick man.
Oh,
on
burger
a breakfast.
Sauce.
Eggs and burger sauce.
Unbelievable. As Alan says, it features a full English breakfast, features a lot of cholesterol. Scottish people eat it.
It's like classic Alan there. He's offending the Scots. He's offended the Irish in previous episodes. He's offended the Welsh. Yeah, but Alan did join in, so he's a terrible human being.
Joined in. Awful.
Would you like to know some of the TV programmes that Gary Wilmot has featured in before we move away from the Wilmot section of the show?
Absolutely. Free.
Okay, a couple of highlights here which I quite enjoyed. Chaz and Dave's Knees Up, Mike Reed's Mates and Music, The Bob Monkhouse Show, The Keith Harris Show, and The Tony Frino Phenomenon, which means he has actually worked directly with Coogan.
Interesting. Who is Gary? Is he a footballer?
No,
he's a sort of 90s light entertainer.
I was thinking of John Barnes.
Yeah, I think he did.
Outrageous.
He did some musicals and he presented some sort of light entertainment stuff.
I've got the Wikipedia intro. He's an English singer, actor, and comedian who rose to fame as a contestant on New Faces.
Okay,
he's shrugging. He doesn't actually know.
You just made that up.
So there's a conversation now between Sonia and Alan about Bono. She's in the fan club. I wondered if any of us have ever been members of a fan club.
Oh, I absolutely have.
Nope. Go on.
I joined, and there was a paid subscription that goes with this.
Oh, can I guess? Was it the Spice Girls fan club?
No, I don't
think.
No.
You did have to think about that.
No, I don't think I joined a fan club. I just paid to see Spice at Wembley and bought Spice World from Blockbuster Video in the collector's edition tin. £20. Sure. Not a problem.
£20? You could buy American Pie on DVD for that.
and I did.
So who was it?
I give up. What was this?
I was in the Placebo fan club.
Oh, good.
Placebo. Yeah.
What did I get? newsletter. Yeah, just a thing of newsletters.
Not even like a lock of Brian Molko's hair.
You must have got a badge of some sort or a card.
I think after a year it was put into liquidation voluntarily.
Okay. Alan claims that he's, quote unquote, very good friends with Bono. And I thought, when did this lie start? Do you think the Bono lie is what got him Sonia in the first place?
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Or he was, potentially. Maybe he was trying to impress her in the early days.
Yeah.
He kind of almost stumbled into the lie and then felt he couldn't get out of it.
Yeah, it feels
it's
like
escalated.
By the way, he's perpetuated the myth of his actual celebrity connections, hasn't he?
Yeah. We've joined him at the point of no return with the Bono lie,
yeah.
I think.
So is Alan a celebrity in this series? Is he defined as a celebrity?
He's bounced back.
But he's
never been a celebrity.
Would he get on Strictly?
Oh, no, I don't think he would.
Celebrity Big Brother?
Yes.
I feel like he could get in there.
I mean,
I'm a celebrity getting out of here as well, definitely.
So you think you can dance?
I met a dog outside this morning that could get in Celebrity Big Brother.
We've got to think. So he, chronologically, he was hosting a primetime chat show on BBC Two before he shot a man live on air. So from that alone, the theory is he was a bit of a known name, but obviously he's trying to bounce back and it hasn't quite worked. So, yeah, he probably is at a Celebrity Big Brother level.
I would generously describe him as a famous face, in people would recognise him, but probably not.
He would be a pointless answer, wouldn't he? On the quiz show Pointless.
I'm not overly familiar with it.
Okay.
But he would
I'll
be.
Take your word for it. he's then putting away the breakfast table while saying to Sonia, I'm going to hump you.
Oh, I love that bit when he's reviewing the breakfast. on the whole, a very good effort. 7/10. Let's make love. Yeah. Straight into
like,
it there.
Is this the one where he's like, I want to make love to you right here, right now. And then there's about 10 minutes of clearing
away
the breakfast.
Yeah, packing away the table.
It's quite similar to that scene in Phoenix Nights where Brian is going up the stairs on a stairlift to the bedroom. Things I'll do to you.
And there is a link to that later in the episode. One of the tax inspectors is the love interest in that episode.
She is.
Yep, we can talk more about that.
Imagine bonking after a full English.
Gassy.
You just want to sit on the bonkette and watch UK Gold.
Have a lie down.
And also there's one bit which is obviously classic Alan, which is brilliant, where he says, I could eat that every day, but I'd be dead.
We also hear a lot more about his dislike of London, which he spells S-H-I-T-H-O-L-E, shithole.
Let's start with some petting.
Shortly after that, Lynn obviously arrives, ruining the love making before it's even begun. And
she's instantly put on the spot.
Yeah, asks to name Sonia's best qualities. Her guesses are astoundingly odd. Hair, neck. Is anyone's neck their best feature?
If it is, it's tough times.
And then eyes, which is a bit more of a sensible guess. Yep. But then eyelashes.
But I think that's Lynn either not really knowing, kind of, it goes back to the drawing of the chalk penis, you know, broadly unfamiliar with the human anatomy from a male's perspective, or she just doesn't want to accept that Sonia might have some nice features like her flammable hair. Or
her way with snappy snaps.
Exactly.
Or her dainty feet.
Yep.
Alan doesn't like big feet. Reminds him of gammon.
Yeah. I think it's a fair point.
I think he's then mulling over some house names.
He is.
At the end of the episode, I'm going to do a little quiz between Nick and Tom Dark. We've got some house names that Alan suggests in the book, and I've thrown in some of my own. So we're going to play house names Alan or Adam later on.
Ooh, very exciting. Good. Tom Stab is exempt because he's reread the book quite recently.
Yes, for the research. So I obviously have a list of all 23 names that he goes through in the book.
Can we just recap the names he goes through in this scene quickly?
No, because some of them are in the quiz. But we can talk about Sonia's.
I mean, the thing is, I've got the script in front of me as well.
We can talk about Sonia's suggestion, which is our house, which is instantly rejected.
Yeah, we could call it that. Oh, actually, that's brilliant because, Lynn, do you want to make a note of that? And then he grabs her hand and writes it out.
We find out that Inland Revenue are on their way around to inspect Alan's tax records.
He's a bit nervous, isn't he?
He's very nervous.
He's not happy.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And it implicates Bill Oddie briefly as well. Finally, there's a Bill Oddie reference in this series.
Right. Is that the first and only Bill Oddie in this series?
It is, yeah. I mean, there's references in the book, but...
Poor Bill.
They couldn't afford his royalties in the after the first series.
I did find an interview with Bill Oddie where he's quizzed about him being named.
Yes.
He's also named in the book, in the book by saying... that Oddie taught Alan how to remain still for long periods of time and go completely undetected in undergrowth and shrubbery, a skill Alan employs to spy on his wife Carol, whom he rightly suspects of cheating on him with a narcissistic sports pimp. So Bill Oddie was contacted. I think this is a piece in The Independent. His response is swift. Anything I can do to discredit the idea that I've even heard of Mr. Partridge, let alone befriended him, is most welcome. Well, that's quite funny, treating him like a real person.
Yeah.
And then he says, do you know, a good number of people have asked the very same thing about what it's like to be cast as the irritant's irritant. But why should I be upset about it? Some have suggested he's setting me up, but I don't think he is, actually. And even if he were, well, it's a compliment. Partridge is a good act. He actually wrote twice, apparently, to Steve Coogan to try and understand why he had been... selected. Implicated in this way. He says Coogan didn't reply. He describes Alan Partridge. There's Bill Oddie's description of Alan Partridge. He's the ultimate sad fucker, isn't he?
So basically, Bill Oddie's gone, oh, it's quite nice. It's a bit of a compliment. Steve, could you give me a bit more context?
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Radio silence.
Can I share with you Bill Oddie's most recent tweet, which at the time of recording is 5 days ago?
Yes,
he
please.
Said this. You envy Cameron's cronies awards. Don't bother. I'm an OBE and it gets me nothing and nowhere. Just catalogues for tie-pins and cufflinks. Bill Oddie is an angry man.
That's a brilliant tweet.
That is his official Twitter account.
Britain's greatest wit. So, the tax inspectors are coming.
And like his foot, he's put his receipts on a spike.
Yep. Lynn is a lot more assertive in this scene. She's taking care of business. She's like, you told me Sonia wouldn't be here.
Yeah, that's true, actually. She's business mouse.
Yeah. It's like they're a team again.
Yeah, yeah. But
I did think that because when they're kind of in cahoots about figuring out how to get rid of Sonia. So again, it's you see they actually have a in this instance it's actually a bit of a working relationship.
I like it when that happens.
Yeah. There is a deleted scene where he describes the two of them as a team, but then he goes back on it straight away.
Yeah. So Sonia has a bit of a solution to deal with the tax man. Anyone know what that is?
Go on.
She's drawn an alien judge.
Oh, golly.
An alien judge who's shooting the tax man.
And the very underrated Alan moment is his facial reaction as he walks slowly towards Lynn.
I mean, you just watch that and think, he hates Sonia.
Yes, so Sonia's basically going to the coffee shop, so that sorts that. And Alan just volunteers that Lynn will drive her to the coffee shop, despite Lynn not actually offering to do that. She's just told what she's going to do, and Lynn's like, yeah.
And then he accidentally calls Lynn. He says, chill out, babe. Love, Lynn. I presume we've all done that at some point. I've called a manner of people babe by accident rather
not
than
babe.
My,
not babe. You can't call him babe.
Everyone.
Well, Pamela Anderson, Barbara Windsor.
I always worry that in the office I'll call someone mum or dad.
Yeah, it's a constant worry. It's a constant worry.
Better than babe.
Depends who it is, I guess.
Alan's forgotten John the Builder's name again. And, yes! And to add insult to injury, his hometown, both of which he's been told
tell
before.
Me your name. That is brilliant, because in the last episode, the previous episode to this, he's trying to make John his new best friend, and then he's forgotten his name
and where he comes from. Yuck. And the associated accent, just doesn't have a clue.
No.
Cotton and guns.
He's then using Sonia's gifts to wipe plates.
Yeah.
And the Inland Revenue arrive. Monica from the...
Adam, before the Inland Revenue arrive, we need to talk about Alan having a bit of a fake bass guitar moment to Music for Chameleons. Course.
I think that's possibly the most iconic moment from this series, do you think?
Probably, it's very visual.
Certainly
In terms of a kind of physical scene.
It's definitely up there.
Yeah. I mean, watching back the episodes for this recently, I've just had that song in my head for about 5 days, just on loop.
That is one thing that DVDs will give you that streaming on Netflix can't. Those DVD
other streaming movies. Services are available.
Absolutely. But that's where Alan, are they? Are they? Alan is very much available. But yeah, it's very good.
I mean, I think we discussed this briefly in episode one of this series. The DVD menu for this is possibly one of the best DVD menus of all time. It's so good.
The tax people are here. It's Monica and Catherine. I did a bit of IMDb research and found some interesting facts. The one who plays Monica only did one more acting job after this in 2004's The Royal. But before that, she had done a hell of a lot of British institutions for Bill. Yes, Doctors, Inspector Morse, Heartbeat, Casualty, Corrie, and she was in an episode of Coogan's Run in 2003. So she's got previous, 2005, so it followed this. Catherine is still acting. She was in Life's Too Short.
She was Warwick Davis's wife in Life's Too Short.
Right. And she was also in a TV movie called Being Danny's Dyer.
that sounds great.
And she was in Phoenix Nights.
Brian Posner's love interest.
And
for an
very importantly, under trivia in IMDb, it just says, can't swim.
It's very important to have things like that on your IMDb page. Also, she was in Time Trumpet, which is another Armando Iannucci show. Yes.
This bit with the Inland Revenue, he could have got away with it so easily, couldn't he? He really ties himself up in knots.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it is funny, but it's a bit odd. Because
what I was going to say. I feel, for me, this is another one of those scenes where it becomes a bit too slapstick and a bit too over the top. Like, you know, he's got his ankles round his ears.
Yeah.
Passing gust of wind. It's like, what? I mean, it's funny, but it is a bit ridiculous compared to season one being slightly more grounded in reality, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And it seems like his entire Inland Revenue experience up to this point is just from hearsay and films and TV. He's got a very warped idea of what they're actually there to do. And at one point, he loses an argument with a toy bear voiced by himself. There is a bit of a theme through I'm Alan Partridge of him starting an argument with himself, but losing it anyway.
Chris Rea is a prime example.
Have any of you let off on someone by mistake?
On someone?
Can you
expand on that?
Oh, Alan lets off a potent gust, doesn't he? By mistake.
But it's not on someone. It's just next to them.
In their general area.
It's sort of in their faces.
Yeah.
I think we'd be lying if we said we've never done it in someone's presence. On someone, I feel like that's next level that I personally can't say that I've done.
That's tantamount to vandalism.
Yeah. The thing I was thinking is, and this is probably obvious, but he talks about seeing Shrek and buying some shoes from Dulce's in Dundee. Is that when he's going on his mad chocolate binge?
I think that's the implication, yeah. Yeah.
Although that is an inconsistency with what is...
In the book,
Alan gets Lynn to come up to Dundee via National Express with his best shoes in a carrier bag.
Maybe he's just lying to the tax inspectors, I think them throwing in Dundee is a reference.
It would
that.
Explain as well what he probably did when he went to Dundee is obviously didn't keep, is filed a lot of those receipts as business purposes when in fact he was having a sort of breakdown. He also had a company called Tomahawk Leisure, which failed.
Of course.
I guess that was followed swiftly by Apache Communications. Yep. There's a theme developing.
There is a visible mini Apache helicopter behind him in the static home in this scene as well, when he's talking about that.
I quite like the thing that he sets up the company, then realises it's inoperable and shuts it down immediately.
And accidentally boasts about the builders, at least their cash in hand.
Yeah.
Which it seems like from the tax inspector's reaction, he would have got away with that too.
Well, yeah.
They would have let him off with
they
that.
Don't really
they sort just of kind challenge. Of roll their eyes at yeah. him a bit, don't they?
They yeah. don't challenge him on anything, despite the fact he kind of jokingly says that he's going to drug them and drop them in the North Sea.
Peter Bainham at the commentary at this point says, "Do you think Alan wishes he could shut up?" I think he probably
yes.
does. He can't get out of his own way.
I guess that's the point in the scene, isn't it? He's so nervous, he's just shit-chatting the whole way through.
Yep, yep.
I always find it weird that he then kind of, after this awkward exchange, decides to walk out and talk to John, and they just sit there and don't go
yeah,
after
Yeah, that's
him
a weird yeah. scene, isn't it?
It's
I don't
so
really get
odd.
That.
He forgets John's name again as well.
Obviously.
And I think my favourite bit of that scene is where he offers John the rest of the day off for having cancer.
Yeah, which John doesn't have.
Doesn't have, yeah.
And gives him the coppers in his pocket yeah. as well as a five as a
He did admit he panicked at that point, though, to be fair.
He also
do lets, declare it.
He lets John know that him and Sonia have been bonking like mad, which made me wonder, do you think Sonia is his first since Jill? In series one.
He
was repellent to women for 2 years, so that's 2 years out of the game.
We've got a 5-year gap between series one and series two, so there's yeah. 3 years of potential lovemaking there.
I don't know if there's any intel on that, but...
I don't know. Tom's gone to his laptop here, but I don't quite know what he's going to search.
Yeah, in the book, Alan says that Sonia, 14 years his junior, she's then 33, awakes his libido, which has been a slumber except for, and he quotes, a distasteful dalliance with a menopausal member of staff years earlier, referring to Jill. So the implication right. there oh, yeah. is that him and Jill completed their thing.
And that Sonia's yeah. his first since. That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh, good. My hunch was right.
And what a great service we're providing here. We're cross-referencing the texts to give you the full picture.
It's almost as though we're doing our research, isn't it? It's about time.
Yeah.
At this point, Sonia's back. Disaster. She's told Tommen to put his coffee shop up inside his ass. and she's also outraged that the tax inspector wears no makeup.
I know. Yeah.
So there's a point where Sonia is repeating back to Alan something that he said about prison being very cushy, like holiday camps. We were tipped off by Ollie B on Twitter. Thanks, Ollie. That if you look very closely, Coogan is mouthing a small part of Sonia's line.
What do we think this is then?
Well, I mean, you mentioned this and I've just had a quick look back. I just think Coogan is going through the scene in his head, like the words, and he's subconsciously just kind of...
Is that because Peter Bainham's in a fridge or something, desperately writing the yeah. screen pages?
Probably.
Yes.
It wouldn't surprise me. They're probably writing this very last minute, yeah. and he's just kind of wanting to keep on top of it, make sure that it's right, and he just subconsciously kind of yeah. mumbles the words along.
I think based on what we've learned about how this series all came together so far, that is probably a case of Coogan was still trying to learn the scene right up to the minute where they had to start rolling cameras.
And say what you like about Sonia, but I do agree with her when she says, tax is
rubbish.
Nick, you're Sonia. Not the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Seems a bit naive that they think no one can hear them, even though they're just behind a thin bit of curtain.
Again,
it?
This is another bit of a
yeah.
hyper-real, surreal
yeah,
but nonsense, it, really.
But it is funny, the fact that he just
yeah.
did you see all that?
Yeah, yeah. Because obviously, you yeah, if yeah. you would know, you could see them at the corner of your eye yeah. right yeah. there, and you're talking loudly.
Yeah. In the commentary, Alan's look at this point is described as airport departure lounge.
It's what, sorry?
Airport departure lounge.
What is?
Alan's look.
Oh, right.
Oh, what?
Smart casual.
As in his, right. His airport yeah. departure lounge. Nice, nice. Although I wouldn't wear it.
You probably would.
Lynn returns. The fat envelope. Not Lynn. Receipts. And then he just exits scene, doesn't he?
Well, that's kind of it, isn't it?
Leads her to clear
that's,
it up.
That's the end of it. It's left with Lynn to sort out.
Goes through that. Well, he goes through the house, though, don't forget, and John the Builder asks him where he wants sockets. Two there. One in the middle of the floor for the computer.
Yeah. Which is funny, because he's been deliberating like mad about all the decisions up
yeah.
to that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And just signs off with, Lynn will answer all of your questions. Yeah. I've got to go to Choristers.
I was a bit curious about that because he says, you know, he leaves Lynn to sort it out, but later on, Sonia's the one that says she kicked the tax inspectors out.
But so. I think Lynn is probably stumbling over her words, didn't know what to say, and Sonia's like, get out.
Well, yeah,
but Lynn,
don't forget, Sonia stormed out after the argument, being yep. Shut up Sonia. So at some point, she's returned to the static home, the tax inspectors are still there, and she's just gone mental.
It's a bit of a mess, isn't it? We're not really clear on exactly what happens because so much of it we don't see.
And he also assumes that she's left him.
I noted that as well.
Yeah, we don't see like what actually happens or what the incident is really in any kind of detail. There's a bit of an argument, but
well, no, but that's it. That's the whole point, isn't it? Well, he jumps. Have an argument and she leaves.
Is he keen for her to leave?
No, but he goes into Coristers and said, my girlfriend's just left me. He jumps to that conclusion. Yeah. They've just had an argument. She hasn't left him. She hasn't said, this is over.
But again, that's the joke. That's the point of how the joke works.
I'm not sure about that one.
Weird. But he leaves the house saying, I'm going to Coristers. So then he's immediately at Coristers saying, so yeah, he's assumed that they've had an argument. She stormed out. It's over.
Yeah.
It's just an increased sense of drama to make it all work within the 28 minutes of the show.
Again.
not sure.
What else is it?
So he's in Coristers, strutting around awkwardly, mumbling to himself, desperately looking for a Daily Mail and a pint to go and sit on the outside to read it. But yeah, it's a bit weird.
Apparently,
the other people in the scene also seem a bit awkward, unsure of what's going on.
Very strange.
It is quite a funny monologue, though. Things like, going to have a sandwich and watch Trevor McDonald. Thank you very much. Probably won't even brush my teeth. Sleep in my trousers. He's experiencing that freedom.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Sorry to hark back, but I've just remembered something about the Inland Revenue part that needs to be mentioned. On the commentary, it turns out that Inland Revenue actually got in touch asking if they could use that footage for a training video.
No!
Surely not.
To say this is how not to do it.
And also, at one point, the Inland Revenue actually did investigate Steve Coogan for a whole year. There's a very long rant. There's a very long rant on the commentary about the fact that Steve Coogan does pay full tax, and he's something of a, you know, he's a stickler for people paying what they should. So
But did the Inland Revenue get confused and think that this was Steve Coogan and not a character? Yeah. It was something to investigate.
Quite possibly.
Here.
Now we're at the BP garage.
Well, but before then, we've got the classic line to end this bit of choruses. I think I'll go and read Sam and Heifer on the veranda. Ain't no one gonna stop me.
And then a weird gurgling noise.
Yes. that's in my notes. It's a very strange noise.
Apparently, Paul Dacre, the editor of the Daily Mail, was very displeased that it was one of Alan's favourite newspapers.
That's his audience,
but I
though.
Think you reap what you sow, mate.
Yeah, exactly. You're scum.
It is of no surprise that Alan reads the Daily Mail, isn't it? That's bang on.
Coristers was actually meant to be a much bigger part of this series as well, but they sort of reduced the number of scenes there. I'm not quite sure why.
I don't think Coristers is, you know, the best scenes in this by any way.
Well, I think the bits with Pete from Dante's Fires are good, and when he pisses his foot on a spot, but I think you're dangerously close to over-egging the stuff that can go on.
It's sort of there just to move the plot on, usually, isn't it? Apart from in this scene. There's another question in the commentary. They're asking, do Daily Mail readers watch Alan Partridge, do they think?
Probably think it's a documentary.
Well, their theory, they were saying, you know, do people who read the Daily Mail stop reading it because they watch Alan Partridge and see him reading it? Or do they think, oh, the writers have let themselves down?
I think Daily Mail readers are
a quality newspaper.
I think Daily Mail readers are probably either blinded by the Daily Mail and think that it's brilliant, or are aware of the fact that people don't think it's brilliant and they don't care.
Let's stop talking about the Daily Mail.
Yeah. It's a weird one, though, because you haven't really got the Al Murray excuse, where there are some people who get the irony in the comedy and some people that appreciate it at face value. It's clearly with Alan, it's, you know, it's not, you're not meant to think, this guy is cool.
No.
That's something that Amanda Unich said, that they use a sitcom as, to quote him, as a kind of social x-ray of male middle-aged middle England. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what they're trying to
social
focus
x-ray.
On.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good.
That's exactly what they're trying to focus on, the fact that the type of person that is a Daily Mail reader probably, I think Alan probably would have gone for Brexit as well.
Oh, God, absolutely. Without doubt.
Because, and there are so many instances across this series and the previous one of him being a bit kind of small-minded, whether he's a bit homophobic, whether he's being slightly racist to other nations. Yeah.
And he definitely stopped watching Top Gear as soon as Clarkson was off it.
Oh, God, yeah.
So Alan is back at the BP garage with Michael, lamenting the fact that Sonia has left him, chatting about... He's kind of critiquing Sonia as a partner, which, you know, generally speaking, is all pretty positive. He focuses straight on the breakfast, which is one of the key things.
Well,
he's
slagging off London before then as well.
Oh, yeah.
Fifum, I smell the blood of an ungrateful bunch of bastards.
He really does hate London.
He really does.
But I think if London liked him, he would be all for London.
Oh, of course.
I'm sure his opinion of London has changed off the back of that meeting in Series 1, or off the back of Chris Feather, Tony Hare's Series 1, him being rejected by the BBC.
He can't get his way back into what he sees as the circle of London media, so therefore it's awful and he hates it.
And again, in the book, he's very critical of the BBC after what happens, because they basically, after the contract is signed for his new series at the end of Series 1, he basically just kind of says that he could have pursued legal action, but he just hates the BBC, that he doesn't want to deal with them anymore, and just kind of walks away from it.
And he does focus on the breakfast, saying she does a fantastic English breakfast, but then thinks about it and downgrades it to just good.
In fact, you can tell him and Michael have discussed her breakfast before, because Michael says to him, is she still making it too bunched up with the egg?
And they've obviously discussed London before as well, because I think there's a bit where Michael clearly talks about Alan's dislike of Londoners.
Yeah. Well, Michael's solution to this problem is just get another girlfriend, and Alan is aware that this is not as easy as Michael might think.
Well, he responds with, no chance, British.
He's written off British women.
He knows he's essentially a laughingstock in the United Kingdom, and he doesn't stand a chance.
But
that made me think, when we were just discussing about Alan would have gone for Brexit, am I correct in saying Nigel Farage's wife or girlfriend is actually of Eastern European origin?
She's so German, isn't she?
It's classic Alan probably being very against European things, foreign things, but yet foreign girlfriend is A-OK.
Yep. He's a walking criticism. He's a walking... What was the word I'm looking for? Contradiction. He's a walking...
Contradiction.
Yeah, thank you.
Lynn's back, and she has savagely overreacted by calling the police because of Sonia's disappearance, I guess.
I also like Michael's reaction. She'll turn up one way or another.
Always bringing a slight element of darkness to proceedings, Michael.
But Sonia returns almost immediately. Turns out they've never split after all. She's got him a beef eater bear, which will be revealed later on.
Yeah.
And obviously Sonia has bought Alan a present. She asks if Alan has done the same for her. He says, yes, I have, and goes to get it. And it's a VHS cassette of stand-up from the Cornish comedian Jethro, signed by Bono. And that starts to unravel Alan's hideous lie about knowing Bono, which Michael picks up on immediately.
Yeah, Michael can see what's going
bollocks,
on.
You don't know Bono.
I love that bit as well, because then Alan turns around at the end of the scene. He's like, "Thank you two for dropping me right in it."
So obviously he's clearly only used that Bono lie to impress Sonia. He isn't telling other people that he knows Bono.
But it's unravelled very quickly, and he has to go to Bono's house. So they're driving to Bono's house, and he's probably thinking in the car, "Where can I go?"
Well, I think the implication is he's been driving around in circles aimlessly for a bit as well.
Yeah.
So when he says, "You don't remember where is Bono's house."
So he just ends up going to the National Trust. Is it Blicking Hall?
Blicking Hall.
Well, Bono's house was actually two locations. So the exterior was Blicking Hall, which is in Norfolk. The interior shots were Austerley Park Hall, which is in Isleworth. So just kind of London-ish.
When they were filming the scenes inside, the actress that played Sonia had to stand on a carpet tile because of the rules against wearing stilettos on the floor. And they weren't allowed hairspray either, so they had to do all of her hair maintenance outside, I think.
Wow.
So a couple of things about Blicking Hall. Nick mentioned it's a National Trust property. It's about 29 minutes from Norfolk on the from Norwich on the A140, and at one time was owned by Thomas Boleyn, obviously Anne Boleyn's father.
Boleyn.
And you know, maybe suggest why Alan points to a picture of Henry VIII and calls him a shit.
I think Alan at this point mentions that Bono owns dogs like fat horses. So I did some research into this. And he's very, very right wing.
That's on the way to the house.
Apparently, it's a fact that Bono did have two dogs, and allegedly they were German shepherds called Fanny and Angel.
What?
Yeah. There's huge debate on a U2 forum from around 2002.
Oh, God.
Does anyone like U2 while Adam's looking that up?
No, we asked this in series one.
Yeah.
None of us.
No, but people that are new to the show might not know.
Well, let me recap. Tom Stab would watch a 40-minute greatest hit set, and the rest of us were not bothered.
I think there's a greatest hits.
I would watch a 40-minute greatest hits. I wouldn't get out of my way for that.
I mean,
they're
pretty much a terrible band, but they have some great songs. Yeah.
Also, this massive debate on the U2 forum about whether or not he's got two dogs ended with someone posting, "You could be right, but it really doesn't matter."
That pretty much sums up the internet, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, definitely this podcast.
Alan's idea of rock and roll extravagance is Bono eating the biggest bowl of Alpen you've ever seen.
I love Alpen. Just thought I'd put that out there.
You are very similar to Bono, actually, Nick.
Not sure about that. I haven't got a four-poster bed.
You're an idiot.
You don't do charity work.
Is Bono an idiot?
Yeah, Bono's an idiot.
Fair enough.
Sorry, Bono. Don't come and get us.
Lynn's Bono arrives on the scene at this point, doesn't he? Wearing a U2 t-shirt and a cardigan.
And some cataracts glasses.
I wondered about this. So Lynn turning up with Bono seems to be a bit of a surprise to Alan. But I think in the script it's... he texted her because he's like, oh, you got my text. But maybe he didn't expect her to actually turn up or to turn up with a Bono.
No, he's asked her to do it.
Yeah, but he looks genuinely surprised. But is that just maybe the appearance of the fake Bono?
I think he asked her to try, but he didn't think she would succeed. Well, I love that he refers to gigs as pop concerts as well.
Who was playing? We were.
Then Lynn and Andrew basically ambush Alan for £30 donation to the
church. That's brilliant, that bit. Can I put a U2 question to the group? So they go through the members of U2, The Edge is Fine, etc. And they say, the drummer. Can you name U2's drummer?
Is it Paul Mullen?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay, Adam, that's your guess, Stab.
I think that's the answer, isn't it?
I'd like a guess from everyone.
I do have a thing in my notes that said, did anyone else have to look up the name of the U2 drummer? So, Steve Mullen, Andy Mullen, I don't care.
Nick?
Graham Mullen?
The answer is Larry Mullen Jr.
I
think we proved the point. Literally, the drummer is fine.
Paul,
no one knows.
Is Paul Mullen the singer from Your Code Name Is Milo? I think that's where I've got confused.
Are they related?
Very similar bands.
Well, I doubt it.
Okay, at this point, they come back to the static home, and Sonia is randomly holding a couple of pizzas in her hand, which
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter, but there's no reference to it. It serves no purpose. Kind of, why is it there?
Well, earlier at Bono's house as well, Alan asked Sonia if she wants to go for a curry, so maybe she's renegotiated the takeaway option.
Oh, yeah. Or maybe. Are they just trying to set so you know it's dinner time? Is that it? Mm-hmm. I mean,
it just seems irrelevant, yeah. But either way, she's holding a pizza.
He's gone with Ye House rather than Excalibur Cottage. I looked up, there is actually a B&B in Yorkshire called Ye Sleeping House. That's the closest I could find.
Yeah.
Yep. And Sonia presents him with the Beef Eater Bear, which is, of course, massive.
Yeah.
Now, I tried looking on the interweb whether you can buy a kind of life-size Beef Eater Bear, and I couldn't find any results that matched. So the biggest one I could find...
Sonia's bought them all.
Yeah. The biggest one I could find was only 36 centimetres high, and also, as an interesting point, that retails for £45.
Whoa.
So Sonia has spent a lot of money on a
life-size She's dropping
life-size
a wedge
one.
Here, isn't yep. she?
Also, Alan's really worried that someone might think that when they see Sonia, they'll assume that he's in the bear outfit, but... Who's going to recognise Sonia apart from the handful of people that she knows in and around the area? It just seems a bit random.
I think he just considers himself to be a local celebrity, doesn't he? So people would know who he is.
He's worried about the damage to his reputation, but it's never going to happen, is it?
No one cares, Alan.
And I wonder, with the life-size Beef Eater Bear, where did she get it from? Surely they're not available to buy in Norwich.
Well, if you've hit a dead end, Tom, how has Sonia sourced this?
Well, exactly. And that was probably before, well, not before the internet.
We'll never
before
know.
Before internet mail order was a big thing.
Because the implication is she has gone somewhere and bought that. Has she nipped down to London and got
She
back
also doesn't drive, does she? So she
no,
would have,
she's gone
she
on
would
the
have, bus. Should we pop to Hamleys now and see if we can find one?
Yeah.
Off we go.
Let's do it.
See you later.
See you next week. No, just kidding. Is there anything else in this episode from anybody?
I just love the end credits bit when they go to London. Because what I think is brilliant about this... Alan hasn't gone with them.
No.
He's just sent Lynn to look after
Lynn
Sonia.
Lynn is essentially a babysitter for Sonia for the day.
And whilst you're cussing between them in London and Alan back at the static home, you can see the Beef Eater Bear is essentially dead underneath the static home as well.
I've seen a lot of people on those sightseeing buses in London. I don't think I've ever seen anyone having as much fun as Sonia.
They are having a lovely time, aren't they? And it's just typical of Alan's fortunes, or you could argue great writing from the team, that he hates London so much but ends up with a girlfriend that loves it.
Yeah. The only other thing from me is that this episode is rated 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb, which is the joint lowest in this series.
Oh. Yeah, well, the ratings are all quite high, aren't they? So
yeah, but I mean, it's still the joint lowest. I wouldn't put it as joint lowest. I think it's a good episode.
Yeah, 8.3. Good score.
Hmm.
Yeah. So in a second, we're going to play the house name quiz. I've got some fake suggestions for Alan's house, along with his real suggestions, and we'll see if Nick and Tom can tell the difference. And also Cards Against Alanity coming up soon.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom.
like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, it's time to play the Alan Partridge house name quiz. I've got a list of suggested names that Alan came up with for his house from the book, and I've added a few of my own. So I need Tom Dark and Nick Older to ping the bell.
We are ready.
And then you have to tell me whether it's Alan's or Adam's. Okay, here we go. Oh, by the way, if you get it right, you get a point. If you get it wrong, you lose a point. Here we go. Number one, Ace House.
Alan.
Nick. Correct. That's one for Nick. Number two, Bradshaw Room.
Adam.
Correct. Number three, Ye Old Cottage Stead.
Adam.
Correct. One for Tom. Number four, Follyfoot. Nick.
Alan.
Correct. Number five, Futures.
I
think that was Nick.
Adam.
Yeah. No, that's Alan.
Oh.
You're off a point. Number six, The Skirmishes. Tom.
That's Alan.
That is Alan.
Yep.
Number seven, Duke House. Nick.
Adam.
That's right. That's me. Number eight, Large Cottage. Nick?
Oh, that was me.
Oh, right. That was Tom. Sorry.
That's Alan.
That is Alan. Yes.
Can we get a score update at this point?
Yeah.
Yes, you can. There are three houses left to name. You are both on 3 points.
This is very
tense.
Wow,
this is tense. Have you got a tiebreaker prepared?
No. number 10, Flambards. Nick?
Alan.
Yes, correct. Yes. Number 11.
I knew that.
Little Homestead. Tom?
Adam.
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay, this is it for the win.
Oh, my goodness.
Hang on, what are we still neck and neck?
You're neck and neck.
Oh, my God. It's four all.
There's only one house left.
I think, come on, hands.
Yeah. Hands on the table.
And the name of that house is Classic House. Nick?
Alan!
Correct. Yeah. Nick is the winner.
Mustard for Tom. At least there's no mustard forfeit this week.
Shall we move straight on to Cards Against Alanity
yes.
then?
Let's do a deep dive.
Get your cards ready. So, Cards Against Alanity is our Cards Against Humanity Alan Partridge quiz. We've taken phrases from this series and everybody's got a few. I've got an incomplete sentence from this episode and we complete it as best we can. Jed is going to ping his bell for the one he likes best and that will be today's winner. The scores over the series so far, Tom Dark's on 2, Nick's on 1, I'm on 1 and Tom Stab is on 0.
Hmm.
Today's sentence... Take that blusher off, you ugly, misshapen headed blank.
Oh, none of mine.
No, mine don't work either. Take that blusher off, you ugly, misshapen headed.
I have a shot at this one.
It works if you ignore the first word.
which you can't.
No.
Doesn't work like I'm prepared to do some editing.
Just hoping.
Jed's perusing this week's submissions. Tom Stab's penultimate chance to get on the scoreboard.
Come on.
Anybody could still. Win. Oh no, anybody could still draw.
Remember, stay tuned.
That's right.
Yeah, if that's not enough reason to come back next week.
Okay, here we go. Take that blusher off, you ugly, misshapen headed John West tin woman. Take that blusher off, you ugly, misshapen headed testy.
Yeah!
Tom Dark's taken
it. It's in the bag.
I thought you said ignore the first word with yours.
Yeah, you can't do that.
That's what he's done.
I took off the word earth testy.
He's removed liberties. Absolute liberties.
Take that blusher off, you ugly, misshapen headed 15 bad bastards in boiler suits. Finally, my one, which makes no sense. Take that blusher off, you ugly, misshapen headed Ferrari of the coal effect gas industry fireplace.
I quite like that one.
So here we go. Tom Dark's got 3. Tom Stab 0. Nick and me both on 1. Final rounds of Cards Against Alanity next week.
Unbelievable.
And that's pretty much it for this episode of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Get in touch with us, Twitter at The Partridge Pod, Facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, and ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. From all of us, thank you and goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Monkey Tennis is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. The artwork's by Dave McNamara, and the theme is an excerpt of the Black Beauty theme, Galloping Home, by Dennis King. To find out more about the records and podcasts made by Post-Pop, head to postpoprecords.com.
Hey. Hello, everyone. Tom Dark, not Stab, from Monkey Tennis here. Just a quick note to say, first of all, thanks so much for buying tickets for our live event. It is now sold out, which has blown our minds. And I think that means we're definitely bigger than Chris Moyles. I mean, Chris, how many tickets have you sold for your live event? Oh, that's right, none. So, yeah, thanks for that, guys. It's mental. It's ruddy, bloody mental. And also, just a quick note to say, if you have listened this far and you're enjoying it, and hopefully you are, then please feel free to give us a rating and a review on iTunes. That would be splendid and tremendous. And I'm pretty sure the ratings have to be 5 stars or above. I just think that's how it works. I don't make the rules, so that's just how it is. But yeah, thanks everyone. And if you're coming to the live event, we'll see you on the 24th of November. Bye.
Monkey tennis.
Damn!
Monkey tennis.
Little piece my foot of this thing.
Monkey tennis.
Go to London. I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated.
Monkey tennis.
Damn!
Monkey tennis. On the whole, a very good effort. 7-10.
It's hotter than the sun.
Back of the net. Monkey tennis.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.